What is the name of this?
This is an adventure in space and time.
I feel like I've heard that somewhere before.
I gotta put the echo on it for sure. Otherwise, what's the point? Everybody, and welcome back to another episode of Who Is My Doctor?
Who is my doctor?
Who is indeed? I am your host, Zach, and I know a lot about Doctor Who.
And I'm also your host, Cassie. And I don't like how much I know about Doctor Who now.
You know so much. You know more about the show than I did when I got to the 50th right now.
Mm-hmm.
Like I had only just started watching classic stuff. You've gotten like a whole proper education.
Mm-hmm.
And that's...
And I've done my own research, too.
You've done your own research. Research that is relevant to today's episode.
Why is that, Zach?
You know why. I literally mentioned it to you in the last recording.
Hey, you know what? We're playing in this space. We're not assuming that everybody listens to every single episode of our show. So let me do a little bit once in a while. What are we doing today, Zach?
Cassie, you're joking me.
You like it.
It's irrelevant.
All right. Today we are watching a nonfiction story called An Adventure in Space and Time.
I feel like I've heard that somewhere before.
This is the story of the creation of the show Doctor Who, and moreover of Bill Hartnell's journey playing the character.
Interesting.
So it's a lot of behind the scenes stuff, a lot of dramatization about the show being made, getting on the air, how it became what it became, all the way up to the introduction of Patrick Troughton. So it's literally the inception of the show all the way to the first regeneration.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's for
when did it come out?
This came out the same time as the 50th. I think it was right after the 50th anniversary.
Okay.
If memory serves correctly, like they played the 50th anniversary special, and then immediately after that, they played this movie.
Okay.
I could be misremembering. It could be the other way around. But I thought that was a really clever idea to like celebrate the show in a way that wasn't just like being reverent to the show. Like,
let's tell stories, yeah, just like the show has always done. But the step outside and say, let's actually see how this show ticks.
Yeah.
And how it got its footing in the first place. Yeah.
This was written by Mark Gatiss, who has written several episodes of the show.
Isn't he also the TV host in Fantastic Four?
He is the TV host in Fantastic Four.
Okay.
He's written a handful of episodes of the show. If you remember the episode where the Doctor is playing electric chess with somebody.
Yeah.
The person that's all dolled up in makeup.
Yeah.
That he's playing against. That's Mark Gatiss.
Cool.
Mark Gatiss has been in, he was also, do you remember the...
Is he predominantly a writer or an actor? Or producer? Or all three?
He kind of does a little bit of everything.
Okay, cool.
Like, he's a real, like, he also had
Mark of all trades.
He had a minor part in the most recent Mission Impossible movie. Like, he's just in stuff. Like, he kind of just does whatever he wants to, it seems.
I feel
like
he... I get the impression that he's a really like nice, good guy. And so when people are like, oh, I have like a little bit part.
Yeah. He's,
and he just goes, I'll do it.
Yeah.
Or they go, oh, ask Mark to do it.
Yeah. He's a good actor. He doesn't have so much presence that he could carry a show on his own, but he's a good character actor.
Mm-hmm.
I think he does a great job. But he's also a very talented writer. He's written several episodes of Doctor Who. He's written episodes of Sherlock. I know he's had his own shows as well. He's a very talented man. And he talked about wanting to make a dramatization of, he's actually brought up a couple times that he wants to do a sequel to this too, in some other important parts of the show's history.
Mm-hmm.
But I think this was the right call. If you were going to make a movie about Doctor Who, this is where you start.
Yes.
The story of the show's beginning, because it is a very dramatic moment. You know a little bit of it with the whole Delia Derbyshire story. You came mm-hmm. in with that. Something that I don't think you know, and this will be touched on in the movie, the show almost failed immediately because the first episode aired the same day as the JFK assassination.
Yeah.
So they this will also go in partly into how they try and correct that and step around it, basically give the show a second chance. But it's a lot of like behind the scenes stuff. But the main character in it really is William Hartnell. And that leads me into the first question of the Cassie Profassi today.
Sure.
They decided to get, I wouldn't call him a big name, but he's a recognizable actor.
Mm-hmm.
You specifically would recognize him from the Harry Potter franchise.
Oh, no.
What actor do you think they fished out of the Harry Potter franchise to play William Hartnell?
Is he one of the big ones, or is he not?
I mean, it's not Barty Crouch level small. He's in, I think, I don't know if he's in every movie, but he's certainly in most of them.
Has he been in Doctor Who before?
Yes.
Okay. That does inform.
The question is if you'll remember him or not.
Well, because I know that there have been three.
Okay.
Okay. I apologize. I don't know anybody's names. I will simply refer to their character names in Harry Potter.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that the people that have been in Doctor Who that have also been in Harry Potter before are. Okay, there are four. There are four people. So this doesn't help me. Filch.
Okay.
Second Dumbledore.
Okay. Michael Gambon.
Thank you. I was like, I know his name is Michael, but I was going to say Giacchino, and I went, that's a composer that is not Dumbledore. So Filch, Michael Gambon, Arthur Weasley.
Mm-hmm.
And I could not even tell. Professor Slughorn.
Oh, yes. Yeah, he was in the...
Not Bradford. What is his... You know that thing where you're...
Jim Broadbent.
Thank you. I was like, I know it. It's a B.
Yeah, so you have so far named...
I've named four.
I've had
four options.
You've got David Bradley, who played Argus Filch.
Yes, David Bradley.
You've got Michael Gambon, who played Dumbledore.
Yes.
You've got Mark Williams, who played Arthur Weasley.
Uh-huh.
And you've got
Jim Broadbent,
who played Professor Slughorn.
Can I ask, of those four,
if those are four that were in it.
Can I ask if one of them is
I can't think of anybody else in the show that was also in Harry Potter. At least that was a man.
Yes.
And David Tennant, obviously, but David Tennant is sort of a...
You, flash in the pan, you even said not as small as Barty Crouch Jr.
Yeah, I specifically said it wasn't Barty Crouch Jr., so...
Yeah. Hello, father! I mean, in his defense, like, I'm sure that there were more scenes with him in it.
Mm-hmm. So you've got... I
did rewatch that one the other day just so I could see baby girl David Tennant.
So you did get yourself some narrowed down choices here. Anyone?
Can I ask if I'm correct?
I can't think of anyone else that was in the show. So
okay,
I will
no,
say
but I'm asking, is one of those...
Well, what I mean is, like, I told you they're in the show. I cannot remember anybody else being in Doctor Who. So
okay.
Yes, I'm telling you it's one
yes,
of those four.
One of those is correct.
Yes.
So I need to narrow it down.
Yes.
All right. So are they specifically portraying William
Hartnell?
They are
playing William Hartnell. Yes, they are not playing the first Doctor. They are playing William Hartnell.
Okay. Because then it goes into... Who has a vague resemblance to William Hartnell? So I'll rule out Mark Williams just because he was so very much Rory's father and does not look a lot like.
Not like the first Doctor, yeah.
Not like William Hartnell.
Now granted,
may I look up a photo of William Hartnell?
Yeah, do you want me to pull it up for you?
Sure. If you want to make sure I'm not cheating.
Now, keep in mind that when William Hartnell was the Doctor, he did also wear a wig. So whoever's doing this could also, in theory, wear a wig.
He's a handsome man.
He is. Yeah, he was.
Like a 50s handsome, which makes sense because that's when he would be young.
Mm-hmm. So you've crossed off Mark Williams. So that leaves you with
Jim Broadbent.
Yeah, Jim Broadbent.
Michael Gambon.
And David Bradley.
David Bradley. I might go David Bradley.
Okay.
I think, because right now I'm juggling between Michael Gambon and David Bradley specifically. Okay. But there's one picture you just showed me of Hartnell, like kind of doing the Kubrick stare. And so I think if you were to get somebody who is a very talented actor, but that is not somebody who is... somebody who's a little bit of a chameleon, which I feel like David Bradley very much is.
Okay.
Because I know that he's been in way more than just Harry Potter, but he's not the type of person that is.
He's also a character actor.
Yes. Thank you. I went to school for that.
For character acting.
I went to school for being able to speak about film, theater, and other media. And, you know, I'm really good at remembering words. So I'm going to say David Bradley.
All right. David Bradley.
I feel very comfortable in that.
Okay. I think that's a very good guess.
Because he was like, even when he was in Doctor Who, the part that he had was not like, I think he was the antagonist, if I remember correctly.
He was a ship captain. He was a ship captain. He wasn't even a ship captain. He was basically like a pirate that showed up and kicked off all the dino people and then stole a bunch of dinosaurs.
I'm saying David Bradley.
All right. David Bradley. It is. And for the second part of the Gossip Girl Fasty, this is a little bit just more of a fun question, I suppose. At near the end of this movie, we get a little cameo from
Canine,
from a future Doctor actor.
Canine.
I mean, like a modern series Doctor actor. Which actor do you think shows up for a little cameo?
I'm sorry, I was really hell-bent on it being K-9 that I wasn't actually listening to your question. Can you repeat it?
So at the end of this movie, there is a cameo from
a future doctor.
From a modern series doctor actor.
Doctor actor. So yes. Not. Okay. Doctor actor as in they are in Doctor Who, or doctor actor as in they are the doctor.
Yeah, they are the doctor.
Okay. A future cameo from a modern doctor. Mm-hmm. Have we seen them as the doctor yet?
Yes.
Well, because I was going to say a joke like half, or I was going to say a name half as a joke, but then I realized, oh, I could potentially spoil stuff for myself because I do a very decent job at avoiding Doctor Who spoilers on the internet. But sometimes it just kind of gets spoiled for me.
Yeah, so it's a big thing. It's kind of hard not to.
It's difficult, too, when I am actively logged into our. You know, our very prolific Doctor Who Instagram. But I try really hard to not engage with a lot of Doctor Who stuff just so that way my algorithm doesn't show up. But sometimes I find things out and I don't want to spoil for the audience what I already know.
Especially because by the time we get there, you might have forgotten it anyway.
I won't. I can guarantee you this is not one that I will. That is a little bit harder to forget. Believe me, I've tried. Okay, future doctor actor that makes a cameo. I feel like there's really only three options.
Basically, yeah, if we've already seen them, unless you're going to include Capaldi's attack eyebrows.
Well, that's kind of who I'm thinking of, because I don't believe that.
You don't think it's Eccleston?
I don't think it's Eccleston. As far as I know, after he was done with Doctor Who, he was done with Doctor Who.
With the exception of his recent return to Big Finish audio dramas.
Well, yes, but even that, as far as my understanding,
he's not returned to the show visually. He does not
return to the show to make any kind of cameo appearance.
Yeah.
So it's either Tennant, Smith, or Capaldi.
Okay.
What kind of cameo? Just like a shot from the show? Are they saying something?
I don't want to spoil the moment for you because it's an important, it's kind of a sweet moment in the show, in this movie.
Okay. If that's the case, because of his now very like intertwined relationship with Doctor Who in its beginnings, I'm going to say Tennant.
Okay.
Just because I do think that there is something there with him not only having grown up watching the show, having a favor, or like having a doctor and then
becoming the doctor
and then marrying into the doctor's family. Yeah. So there is enough there that I'm like,
it would make sense.
I feel like I have enough credence and enough specificity for that answer that I'm comfortable giving that. And if I'm wrong, then I'm surprised.
Yeah. I mean, you could say the same for Capaldi though, because Capaldi was the head of a Doctor Who fan club before he was the doctor.
He was in an episode before. Yeah, but we haven't properly met. It feels weird That's saying true. It. It feels weird screaming out the name of somebody I haven't met yet, you know?
All right, then. Well, we will find out together if William Hartnell is portrayed by David Bradley and if there's a brief little uncredited cameo from David Tennant.
Plus, then my answer is David squared, a dual David.
Duovid.
David duo.
David du.
Yeah, David D.
Let's find out together if this movie has David Tennant and David Bradley as we watch An Adventure in Space and Time.
You're saying that incorrect, Zach.
You're right, sorry. As we watch An Adventure in Space and Time.
Who's Anne Time? I'd love to meet her.
Today's episode of Who Is My Doctor is brought to you by us. Yes, us. The brilliant minds behind the genius idea of watching Doctor Who and then talking about it for your entertainment. Did you know you could support this kind of brilliance over on Patreon? At patreon.com/whoismydoctor, you can donate as little as $1 a month to get episodes of this podcast a whole week early. And our $5 Big Daddy Dalek patrons get a shout out in the outro of every episode using any name you like. Patrons also get to pitch ideas for Cassie for Cassie questions or classic episodes to watch for future episodes. I know it's the holidays, so no pressure if your money is tight, but if you like what we do and you want to help us keep making it, it really does help us out a lot. Once again, that's patreon.com/whoismydoctor, and now back to the show. And we are back from an... Actually, do you want to take this one, Cassie?
Yeah, sure.
And we are back from...
An Adventure in Space and Time!
So what'd you think, Cassie?
Did you ever see... Have I shown you my favorite movie similar to this? Saving Mr. Banks?
No, I have not. Because
this was effectively just Saving Mr. Banks, but Doctor Who.
Saving Doctor Who.
Saving William Hartnell, even though.
Saving Mr. Hartnell.
Yeah, Saving Mr. Who. I bring that up because Saving Mr. Banks is legitimately one of my all-time favorite films. Because I really like taking little moments in time, in space and time, and expanding upon how that moment came to be. And especially in a dramatic retelling where you can really hone in and focus on specific characters and their relationships with the people around them.
And they're both about men with smoking problems.
They're both about men with smoking. Well, that's the thing, though, is if I'm drawing that comparison, Bill Hartnell is not like, oh, my God, I'm blanking out on Thompson's
PJ Travers?
Yes.
PL Travers.
PL Travers. Thank you.
PJ Travers.
Hello, I'm Pajama Travers.
Sorry, no, PL Travers.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. I say that because, like, that movie for whatever reason really strikes a chord with me. This struck that same chord, and I'm trying to unpack how that is and why, and so perhaps while we're talking through it, I will stumble upon it. But barring that, I really liked this.
Yeah, I think this was really, really good.
This was fabulously well made. The casting in it, all
the main cast.
All but one person was casted beautifully.
Yeah.
Both in, like, their performers did a very good job, but looks-wise, like... could not be better. I always think that's something that is sometimes is a fleeting thing, is casting a film not based off of talent for, like, oh, well, if we hire somebody like, I don't know, Chris Pratt, then, like, that'll really drum up an audience. But really taking into consideration, like, no, we need to, especially when you're doing this kind of stuff, like, choosing casts that look like the people that they are supposed to be portraying. So important and so very in this case, so well done.
Yeah.
David Bradley.
Like, when you think about how, like,
my heart hurts.
When you think about him as Filch, as him as this, like, basically evil, crotchy old man.
He's not evil. He's just...
There are times where he's cheering on the bad guys.
He's a grumpy old man.
Yeah. But he also seems to enjoy, like, tormenting the children, and he's got, like, a yellowed teeth, gnarled look. And then you see him in this, and while he definitely has, like, grumpiness to him, there's a part of that... When you watch the performance, there is this, like, I am grumpy because I don't get to be whimsical. I don't get to be eccentric.
I've been put in a box. I've been put in a box where now people expect me to do this thing.
Yeah.
And this thing is a drill sergeant, is an army captain, is not fun.
Yeah.
I don't get to be fun. People don't want me to be fun. Therefore, I'm not fun.
Yeah. I have found myself in a place where I am typecast, and it is affecting me negatively personally.
Yes.
And there's a part of it where, like, because when you first see him, he's kind of unpleasant. Like, he's being mean to his granddaughter. He's clearly being impatient with his wife.
Sweet Judy. Lovely little Cindy Lou Who Judy.
Cindy Lou Doctor Who.
That was a good joke.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All the Doctor Who's down in Doctor Whoville. See, now you're just picturing them all singing Da Who Dore.
No, I'm thinking about every doctor singing, because we're in Who.
Can you picture for a second the Jim Carrey Grinch movie, but all the Who's are played by different doctors?
But Jim Carrey is still the Grinch.
I was saying, but the Grinch is the master.
Still played by Jim Carrey.
He's got a green goatee.
Oh my God. Where? Who's here? But it, oh my God. Wait, don't. For those in the audience who may or may not know, I work in a theater space now, and the current show that we're working on is Seussical, which is not at all by any means my favorite, except it is specifically designed to get on my nerves.
But now if you picture it not as a Seussical, but as a Doctor Whoussical.
Yeah, if we rewrite it as Whoussical, where all of the doctors are Who's in Whoville, and then all the companions are the jungle citizens, you get a much more engaging story.
Well, in Doctor Whoville, they say, the Grinch's two hearts grew three sizes that day.
Anyways, I'm gonna get really obsessed with that thought for the next like 4 days.
I'm glad I could ruin your work for you.
Thank you.
Anyway, yeah, I also sort of told a little bit of a fib. This movie is not technically about William Hartnell. It is, at least the back half of it is, like the third act sort of gets handed off to William Hartnell.
I was going to say this movie is a little bit, or the way that the story unfolds rather is, what am I thinking? Track and field relay race.
Yes.
Where it starts with Sidney Newman.
Yeah. The very beginning is Sidney Newman, who has the basic idea for Doctor Who but his big thought is to promote Verity Lambert to be the first female producer at the BBC. And so he brings her in and she's like, I don't want to be your assistant. And I was like, no, you're not going to be my assistant. You're going to produce it. As soon as Sidney Newman hands it off to Verity, it becomes not just Verity's, but Verity and Warris's. Mm-hmm. Like that. It's both of their thing for a little while.
Mm-hmm.
And you really get this, like the feel that this show is a scrappy underdog story.
This is
the first female producer at the BBC alongside an Indian gay director who's young. Yeah, young Indian gay director. And you're like, that can't be easy in the 60s. That wouldn't be easy now.
Yeah, for real. As a fellow woman, it's so empowering for me to see like, wow, real women doing real things.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of times that I feel like in film, especially with things that hold such reverence, we forget how cavalier so much of it is. Because
mm-hmm.
now we look back on it and I'm like, of course, like Dalek would be a, you know, of course Dalek is a big deal.
Well, it's almost
but
like
not at its inception
to you and I who like know enough about the show. There's a part of it that almost feels like a joke where he's like, this Dalek thing had better work out or this show's in the can. If these Daleks aren't a smash success.
Dorlog. He did my favorite naming convention of strangely people in the 60s not remembering people with D names. Durwood.
These are Helix.
Yeah.
Yeah. I appreciate that. You know, it really feels like Sydney believes in Verity in a way, like
believes in her so much that he specifically says, I'm looking for somebody with piss and vinegar in their veins. And she goes, thank you.
And then he says it like five more times.
She yells at him at one point. He goes, I asked for this.
I wanted piss and vinegar.
I wanted piss and vinegar. Which is so fucking relatable to just be like, I got what I asked for. This is what I wanted. Okay. Yep. I made my bed. I'm lying in it now. Thank you.
Well, it also really makes it seem like he appreciates her for who she is. It's not
he
just
wanted her to he wanted her to be nasty to him. Yeah, like that's.
It feels like he didn't just want to be like, well, I'm going to be a big deal by promoting a woman, blah, blah, blah. He's like, no, I picked her because she has the personality that I want to run this show.
I picked her because she is a Taurus. She's stubborn as hell and will get the job done.
Now you got me curious when Verity Lambert was born. No, she's the opposite. She was born in November.
Okay, so she would be
November 27th. So whatever's before Capricorn.
Sagittarius.
I think that's right.
I think so.
And also the actress that plays her does a great job too.
Everybody. I know we've already said this. Everybody does a phenomenal job.
Yeah, like they are fucking killing it.
This is another case where Zach and I are going to just be talking about things we like. Buckle up, kids, for the next hour. We'll just be saying, this was good. I like this part.
Yeah, I don't know if it's credit to the director, too, because the director's part is who having to steer that ship. He apparently has directed like episodes of Breaking Bad. So he definitely has like the pedigree to
Warris?
The director of the movie.
Well, the director of the movie doesn't have a lot to do with casting. That's specifically the casting director.
Right, but I mean, but you know, the director still has to like get the actors where he wants them to. So I wanted to give a shout out to him because I'm sure he doesn't get a lot of the credit amidst the pomp and circumstance of David Bradley and everybody else. But speaking of the director, Sacha Dhawan also does a great job as...
Yeah, he's such a snack.
Oh my God. What a beautiful man.
He's like... I had the thought. I didn't write it down because I got too excited. Indian Jason Schwartzman. Where I was just sitting here going, oh my God. Oh my God, I'm in love.
Yeah, Sacha Dhawan is a very handsome man. And I am happy to say that he actually gets a role in Doctor Who in the future.
Oh yeah.
You won't see him for a while. It's not till the 13th Doctor, but I think you'll like him. But yeah, he's got big bushy eyebrows, but it works for him.
I didn't even notice. I was just captivated by his like twinkly eyes.
His like cheeky little smile.
Yo.
He's got a beard now too, which only makes him all the more handsome.
I just kind of looks like the tech bro.
Yeah. What wonderful, wonderful cast. Brian Cox as Sidney Newman fucking kills it. Well, of course, it's Brian Cox. Brian Cox doesn't know how to do a bad performance.
What else is he in?
I know it until you ask me the question, and then suddenly it all evaporates from my mind.
So I don't want to sit and be like, oh, yeah, I totally agree. I don't recognize the name.
You would know him most from is the second. Actually, I don't know if you've seen all the X-Men movies. Have you seen X2?
It's been a minute.
Okay, well, he plays the bad guy in that William Stryker. He plays William Stryker in that one. He's been in Frasier and Deadwood. He's been in Braveheart and Manhunter and The Rookie. He's been in a lot. He's a very prolific actor. He's specifically a Shakespearean actor too, so he does a lot of stage work.
Oh, okay.
He's in Succession. That's a big one. Yeah, he's one of those actors that, like, I forget how good he is until I'm seeing him. And so I'm like, oh, right. He's fantastic. That's right. I forgot. Yeah, they all crush it. And the pacing of the movie is also really, really good.
Yes.
Like, for
how long was this?
This was 83 minutes.
OK, no, it wasn't.
Right. Well, it's just like it sort of just takes you, like, you're like, OK, here we go.
Yep.
And I do like the movie does find a way to, like, slowly hand it off from Verity to Bill. It's like you described it as a relay race, but there is a part of it where it feels like Bill gets a little bit more of the movie as it goes on.
The movie opens with Bill.
Yeah.
It actually, the movie opens on a police call box doing its job as a police call box.
Yeah.
Which, do you know how jarring it was for me for a hot second to be like, why is there police coming out of the TARDIS? Oh, that's right. That is a police call box doing its job.
That's the actual police call box.
Whoopsie doodle. I forgot what year it was.
Yeah, that's a very good thing to, like, play up you as a Doctor Who fan's, like, perception, and not necessarily you specifically, but, like, anyone watching
the royal you.
Yeah, anyone watching it would have to, like, I can't picture someone watching this unless they're a Doctor Who fan. It'd be a really weird thing to tune into.
Fair.
Now, granted, I do think it would still work if you, like, if you took this as a fictional pretense, like, if you assume this was all a fictional story, I think it still works.
I think this also works for anybody who is interested in film.
Yeah.
And film, like, television production media.
Yeah.
Just coming from, like, that perspective. Yes, you are also peering into the lives of people that you may or may not know anything about. But especially looking at it from a, like, I could see somebody having a class watch this if they're specifically going over, like, women's roles in the 1960s. Because you do get quite a few perspectives where you do see Verity being a woman in what is conventionally a man's world. But then you also get, and I'm feeling bad because I don't remember her name, but you do see Bill Hartnell's wife doing the homemaking, you know, taking care of the granddaughter.
Heather Hartnell.
Just Heather, thank you.
Yes.
Taking care of the granddaughter and, you know, making this, taking care of the home while Bill is out working.
Yeah.
You know, for days long recording and filming segments. Mm-hmm.
Coming home and needing to run lines while going to bed.
Yeah. If you're looking at it from that context, like, I think that you could definitely.
And I also like that, you know,
justify showing this not just to Doctor Who fans.
Yeah. And I do like that Heather Hartnell also speaks up as, like, someone that cares about his health.
She's like an advocate for him.
Yeah,
she wants her husband to be happy, and she wants him to continue doing what is clearly, like, the highlight of his life, but is also really not wanting him to hurt himself.
Yeah, like he is too happy in his position for her to try to take that from him, even though she knows it's basically killing him.
Mm-hmm.
And so I like there's so much good going on in here.
There was something else. I don't know if you clocked it.
What's that?
So when we first see Verity, they're at a, like, a house party, and she's wearing a black dress, like with a collar and very 60s. Everybody in the party is wearing just very muted colors. But then when she gets the job working on Doctor Who, she's wearing blue.
Mm-hmm.
And the entire time she is working on Doctor Who, she's wearing either blue or red. But then the second that she leaves, she's back in black and white.
Interesting. I didn't catch that.
All of the cars that we saw, too, were in varying shades of blue. There were no other brightly colored cars.
Mm-hmm.
Also, Warren.
Warris?
Yes. Was also wearing primarily red.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think he wore blue ever. And same with Sydney. He was also wearing primarily, like, red and orange, which I thought was just kind of interesting. Specifically putting Verity in blue because blue is so synonymous. The particulates of the shade of blue that she was in are so synonymous with Doctor Who and the TARDIS.
Yeah, and I do think, I mean, you noticing that also does remind me that this show was nominated for several BAFTAs, including editing, makeup and hair, and costume design. It won for makeup and hair, which makes sense because this is a lot of 1960s makeup and hair. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's not just 60s makeup. You're making all these people look like real people.
Yes.
Yeah. Like it's clearly David Bradley. They're not like putting him in a bunch of like.
It's clearly David Bradley. However.
But it's so different from anything we've seen David Bradley in. And I think there's something to him that echoes with Bill Hartnell, because, you know, Bill Hartnell was this very curmudgeonly, like, stiff military type. And David Bradley, in the two main things I know him from, he's, you know, not a good person really in either of those. He's
what else has he been in?
I'm thinking about specifically in
Filch,
Harry Potter, when he's playing Filch, and when he was in that episode of Doctor Who, he's a bad guy in both of those.
Yeah.
He's also in Game of Thrones, plays kind of an asshole in that too. He plays a lot of like bad guys. And so to give him this character that is known for playing one thing, but he wants to be liked and, you know, he, like Bill Hartnell keeps saying that he wants that twinkle. And there's a part I don't know, obviously, but I do wonder if David Bradley felt a kinship in that way of this. Like, I don't want to just be a bad guy all the time. I know what my like face and voice lend to. I get it. But can I please play a role where I'm a good guy? And he gets that.
Can I please play a role where I can be loving?
Yeah. And it's amusing to me that Bill Hartnell found that in The Doctor, and then David Bradley found that in Bill Hartnell.
Yeah. For real.
Again, I'm sure that if I went through his body of work, there might be more to it than that. But, you know, for at least the big things that he's known for, he is certainly not typically a good guy. Like, I think the closest I can think of is he's in The World's End, and he plays kind of he doesn't play a bad guy. He plays like a rambling lunatic. Mm. he's not playing like a warm, loving grandfather type. I'm glad we get to see him in this, because I think it let him spread his wings a little bit as an actor in a way that I don't think he normally gets the opportunity to.
Yeah.
I'm also a little embarrassed how little I remembered of this movie, because it's really good, but I really haven't watched it since it aired. I watched it. I really liked it. And I like pocketed it away. I was like, I think I want to watch again eventually. And I just never got around to it, because I think about sometimes we've talked about, especially thinking back on the Delia Derbyshire episode where you'd ask me some of the things about how they made the title sequence and all that, and they just fully tell you in this movie.
Yeah.
And I was just like, I had flushed it. It had left my brain since then about the thing about the keys and the filming the camera's own sensor and all that stuff. Like, it was just very silly to me that I went, whoops. If I had remembered this movie, I wouldn't have got those questions wrong.
Aw, Zach, you had a Cassie moment.
I did have a Cassie moment.
Going back to just kind of giving David Bradley all the accolades.
Uh-huh.
There is something to be said of watching a man slowly lose himself over a series of, for us, you know, it's a man losing himself in 60 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I recognize it's over time, but they had some really well done sequences of them, of the cast taking promotional photos. And you can see in the first one, he's very excited. He's smiling. They're holding champagne. And, you know, then the next set of companions come in and he's just kind of staring off as an old man would. And mm-hmm. by the time the third companions come in, he's just absolutely not there.
Yeah. And he's standing further and further away from them every time.
Yeah. Standing further and further away. You know, you had pointed it out earlier, he has that really terribly emotional monologue about how he doesn't want to go.
Yeah, when he basically gets told that he's being fired because he can't keep the show going, and he's going to be replaced with Patrick Troughton, and he goes home to his wife that told the production what was going on and that he would have to like be ebbed off the show, basically. Yeah. And he just starts breaking down. And I don't know if David Bradley was doing this intentionally. I know Tom Holland does it. I guess there's an acting technique that some people do where if they repeat a phrase over and over again, that's how they get themselves to cry.
Yeah.
If you watch Infinity War,
mm-hmm.
when Peter is being turned into dust, he repeats the phrase, "I don't want to go, I don't want to go, I don't want to go," a lot. So that's him doing that, is he's getting himself to cry by doing an acting technique. And David Bradley doesn't hear where he repeats, "I don't want to go, I don't want to go," which is also one, a very cute allusion to the 10th Doctor. But also,
it's so fucking sad.
Yeah, it really is. Like, I was crying.
Same.
Yeah.
Because it's also something to be said of, you know, when you have members of your direct family that you are watching slowly lose themselves.
Yeah.
Watching somebody, like, repeat and have the wherewithal to say, "I don't want to go," because they know they're losing themselves. Like, that's a hard thing to see. And then you remove yourself out of that context and remember, I'm watching an actor doing their job. I'm watching an actor do something so believably that I am sitting here crying just thinking about it.
Yeah. I mean, there's also...
Give this man a raise. God, let him be silly. Let him be Father Christmas or somehow a combination. Let him do combo C.S. Lewis, H.G. Wells, and Santa again. Let David Bradley be a doctor.
I mean, that'd be fun, wouldn't it? Because yeah, because I mean, it would be the first time William Hartnell's gotten recast. I really like this. I think it's a really good time. I do want to commend. I just read you a second ago that the editor was also nominated for a BAFTA, and the editor also did a fantastic job. There were moments early on where it felt so like natural how it flowed.
Yeah.
Specifically, I'm thinking of the moment where Verity is watching on the television the Russian woman going into space.
Uh-huh.
And there's something like the way they've timed it where it cuts to, they're watching it and it cuts to like a shot of, you see something over the, like, flying through the sky.
Mm-hmm.
And it just sort of pans back and you see Sydney Newman looking up at the sky.
Yeah.
And I was like, and it's just so perfectly timed. Like, I know that that's partly the production team of the cameraman and stuff like that, but like, as an editor, it was just so perfectly paced that you almost don't notice that you switched into a different scene.
Too many ideas. Pick which one. Okay, they all left at the same time. Hold on, let me try to sum
all your
one.
Thoughts. Irish goodbye.
Give me your boy. Come on, idea. It's also the whoever like edited the God, edited is such a stupid word, and refined the screenplay as well, because there was a lot of time, because I there was a moment where I was like, oh, like they're doing a like farewell party to Verity.
Mm-hmm.
And I had asked you, like, did I miss something? And you said no, like, it's just when Heather is speaking to Verity and she says that she'll bring it up with her successors. This film did a very good job at not explicitly showing you everything that is happening.
Yeah.
It's natural in the way of, like, there are not many times like where you hear a story secondhand where somebody sits you down and says, so here's what's happening. Yep, 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 yep. Especially when they're not like super close, intimate friends.
Yeah.
So this does a very good job at just making you as the audience member just feel like you are picking through pieces of information. These are more curated pieces of information, mind you, but having to go through and not explicitly be told or shown everything that is happening, especially to any individual characters, making this film more of an ensemble than, you know, we have our main, we don't have any main characters.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I suppose if you want to say that Bill Hartnell is the main character,
I would say it starts as Verity as the main character. And basically that line where it says, "I will pass that note on to my successor," that's the moment that the show, that movie gets handed off to Bill Hartnell, which in some movies bothers me. I've seen some movies where it's like, you don't seem to know who your main character is. In this one, it knew that what's going to happen here.
The main character is Doctor Who.
Yeah. The main character is the show. Yeah. Yes.
Look at you and I being on the same wavelength again.
And so what you get instead of this feeling of, you know, the it doesn't know who the main character is when it hands off, you instead get this feeling of like things that were integral to this story are falling away.
Yeah.
Like you don't, you suddenly are, you suddenly are left with empty hands.
Because first we lose Warris, mm-hmm. and then we lose Verity.
And then it's Bill's turn.
And then, well, because then you are, they have a fabulous scene where it is like a whole new production staff.
Yeah.
And then Bill, who is saying, no, I don't want to do that. That's not the button that turned, that opens the door. That one is.
Yeah, the button opens the door is on the other side.
Yeah, nobody's going to know. Yes, they will. Like, okay. And if we're in motion, then the centerpiece, the center cylinder should be going up and down. Okay, yeah. Like, well, we'll get somebody on that. And just like you, the audience, and Bill are all in this thing of like, oh my God.
Well, especially because
newbies.
The way they had written him earlier was that even he had said, like, I need time in the set. I need to figure out what all the buttons and dials and switches will do, because kids will pick up on me faking it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, and there's a part of it that's like, I don't know if that was accurate, if it was accurate and put in the movie, or if it was just something they came up with to give Bill Hartnell that trait. It was a brilliant idea, because it's one of those that tells you, like, he doesn't view the material that he's working with as beneath him. Like, there were people in the BBC, like the production designer who was supposed to design the TARDIS, who just kept dragging his feet on it, working on other stuff, until Verity came in and basically annoyed him into making the TARDIS.
Which was just like a board.
Yeah, it was a board that already had holes like pre-knocked out of it. So he knocked some more out, put it down on the wall, grabbed like a spool and stuck it in the middle. And then like a little hexagon brass thing on top. I was like, there you go. You happy? And I'm like, huh, when you break it down, that really is kind of all it is. It's just a hexagon
in a room.
At least
to begin. Yep.
I mean, even in the modern, series, even if you think about Matt Smith's new, they polish it up in different bells and whistles, sometimes literal bells and whistles.
With the exception of 13s, yes, it is just a hexagon in a room.
Yeah, 13, they're like, what if we put in some giant crystal columns?
What if we make it magical? What if we make her a witch? Yeah.
Yeah, I...
More on that
in probably a year or two.
Yep.
I like how they even say, like, just throw something together. It might be the most brilliant idea you've ever had. That is the only maybe hiccup I have with the show, is that with the movie, is that it does treat Doctor Who as like this big reverent thing. And I'm like, it's kind of just a sci-fi show. Like, it's good. Don't get me wrong. It's good. But I don't know if you would say any of this is like the most brilliant idea anybody ever had. It just happens to work out. Which, I don't know. Maybe that really is brilliance. Maybe brilliance is just simple things that work.
No, well, see, I have the philosophy in my life where things just kind of work out for me. Like, it is a thing that through my mental wellness journey, I just remind myself constantly that things just work out for me. And you know what? Things usually do just kind of work out for me. So that, I feel the same way about this, where the mentality is just, you know, what's going to happen is going
to
happen.
I do have to say, I appreciate their attention to detail in this one. When we are in the TARDIS set, we do see that big, stupid column of like nothing. His coat rack, the one wall of the TARDIS that's just a sheet, mm-hmm. just a sheet with circles printed on it.
I do like the shorthand of BEM for
bug-eyed monsters.
Thank you.
And then, of course, speaking of bug-eyed monsters, the attention to detail when it comes to the Daleks, these shiny silver boys with their bright blue bumps.
I am so happy that they got Nicholas Briggs wearing a little wig.
Put him in a wig.
Nicholas Wigs.
Hi there. Welcome to Nicholas's Wigs.
But yeah, what a delight to see Nicholas Briggs doing an impression of original Dalek.
Yeah, he's he's doing a Dalek voice, but not his Dalek voice. He is reenacting the original Dalek performances.
Which also, I know that we had had this conversation when we watched that particular story. Are the voice mods in the suits or are they on to the side?
They appear to be on to the side, at least, yep. at least if this movie is being told accurately.
If this movie is canon, which it is.
Canon to history.
Oh, I had mentioned that the perfect casting all the way through, but then we get one shot at the very end.
Yeah.
Of freaking Patrick Troughton, a.k.a. Amanda Bynes, and she's the man. there are some things where I was like, I can forget. Like, there's a lot when you're doing these types of films, like, you just kind of have to. You kind of have to just go with the flow, mm-hmm. particularly like. When you have a scene that takes place in a space that no longer exists or has changed since then. So I did not ever expect them to be able to perfectly encapsulate what it was like during the early 1960s at the BBC. Very happy that they were able to at least get a couple very like wonderful wide shots of the building. But then they freaking pan over to Patrick Troughton. I wrote down the fucker's name so that way I could speak it like specifically. It was Reese Shearsmith. What were okay?
Here's the thing. I don't think it's that bad.
It's bad. He's wearing a bowl cut haircut. He looks like he's trying to do an impersonation of a Beatle.
To be clear, I don't think it's good. But what I mean is Patrick Troughton has such a unique face.
Then get him prosthetics.
That I can't
literally find anybody else.
I just can't find. I can't imagine you being able to find someone that really looks like him.
Fucking figure it out, dog.
But yeah, especially contrasting it, though, with all of the other actors who kill it.
Even Delia. She just had you saw her for like 30 seconds.
I do like the little, speaking of Delia real quick, I do like the little almost shade they seem to throw where it's like the Doctor Who theme and they like pan over to by Rob Grainer and there's no man in that room.
Nope.
I feel like it was just like, we can't get hung up on Delia's story, but we can throw a little bit of shade at it by just telling the truth.
The music notes are Ron Grainer. The actual orchestration and percussion and all of that, that's all Delia.
Yes. And then, but then another little thing at the end, and this is where you did not get the professy point, is they have a moment where they're about to film the scene where Hartnell hands the show off to Troughton. And they just have a moment where Hartnell just like looks up and looks directly into the camera. When it cuts, it reveals that he's seeing Matt Smith.
Matt Smith, who was keyed in.
Yeah. And one shot poorly because they forgot to cut out the TARDIS that he's supposed to be behind.
Yep.
Which is unfortunate that that's such a weirdly like basic error in a way that I'm surprised they made that mistake.
I am surprised that they, you know, not like I'm surprised that they chose Matt Smith. But there is a part of me that's like, if you're choosing the most current doctor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's about who they hand the show off to, that the show will eventually become this. And the reason I know it's that he sees where the show is going is because they re-aired this for the 60th anniversary, but it wasn't Matt Smith anymore.
Are you for real?
Yes, they.
Stop.
They
no.
did a re-edit of it. Where when he looks up, he instead sees Nshutigatwa. Which I will say, there's a part of it where in this story, I do think Nshuti is the right doctor for them to have him see instead.
Well, yeah, because he's not just looking at another white man. Now, do they cue him in correctly? Yes, they do.
Hang on, this wasn't where that wasn't the shot. The shot that was wrong was.
Like, I know it's a hot minute before we get to Nshuti. I am so excited. He's such a beautiful man.
Yeah, they definitely did a different cut for that because the shot where he winks, that was where Matt Smith was poorly edited. I mean, but also when you think about you know, who this movie started being about was Verity and Warris. Warris, who is a gay Indian man, a gay person of color, cut to at the end of this movie, Bill Hartnell sees the doctor is now a gay person of color.
Yeah.
There is sort of a, like, that is a
much better, but it really does show you, like, damn, time has passed.
It's a more thematic bookend. Especially because that's where the movie ends. Like, you don't get to see the scene where he regenerates. You just see him sort of, like, smile at Matt Smith. Matt Smith is gone. He does his little thing, and then it fades to the credits of, like, where these, like, what happened since?
Yeah. Where are they now?
Where are they now? Mostly dead. Yeah. Because it was 50 years ago.
6 feet under, and they worked in film and media. Their lives aren't very long.
I do think there's something more thematically appropriate to it being in Shooty. But obviously he wasn't the doctor when this movie came out. So no. There's no way they could have done that. But I do think there was a good.
Do you think when they re-show for the 70th, they'll key in whoever?
I don't know. I genuinely don't know. I do know that Mark Gatiss wants to make a sequel.
Let him write.
He is at least
write and direct, or just write.
He just wrote. He just wrote it. I actually don't know that Mark Gatiss. Mark Gatiss does direct. He doesn't direct much. He mostly writes and acts. But I know that he specifically has talked about wanting to make a movie based on Colin Baker's time.
Ooh.
Because that was such a tumultuous era for Doctor Who, where the show was on the verge of cancellation basically all the time.
Ugh.
And there was a lot of tension on set because Colin Baker wanted the Doctor to be one way. The production wanted the Doctor to be a different way. People are trying to, like, get out of their jobs.
Yeah.
Colin is the only one trying to keep his job, and he's the one who gets fired. Like, it's a lot of drama going on. And I totally get why that would be a place you'd want to mine for. Like, if you're going to make stories about Doctor Who production, that's probably there's really three times I think would make good movies, one of which Mark Gatiss can't write because he's so heavily involved with it personally, which is the show coming back in 2005.
Yeah.
Like, he is friends with Russell T. Davies, and he wrote scripts for the first season. So while I'm sure he could tell it accurately, I don't know that he could tell it without a significant amount of bias.
I was going to say it would be an extraordinarily one-sided.
Yeah. Whereas, you know, part of what I think makes this work is that he is willing to let Bill Hartnell be kind of curmudgeonly and unlikable for the first scene.
But he's so good with the children.
Yeah, when the children come up and they're like, can I get your autograph? And he's like, all right, there's all these children here. Well, let's take a stroll down to the TARDIS. Oh no, the Daleks are here. Run, everybody, run. It's like, that's really endearing.
That is one of my favorite, not tropes, qualities. Just when you have people that are very, very much capable of playing Ebenezer Scrooge, but then they turn out to be big old softies around children.
And I also like that journey starts with his granddaughter.
Oh my God, his granddaughter in real life and then his granddaughter in the show. Oh my God. No, but when she's talking about specifically like, oh, yes, you can do anything because you're the doctor and you have the TARDIS. I think it'd be really wonderful if the doctor did this. And he's just like,
I was like, you said gloves. That's because you need special gloves to touch the Daleks. You must know that because you're the doctor and you're really smart.
And inside he's just like, no, it's because I forgot. I'm losing.
It's because I flubbed my lines and I only get three takes, dear.
It's because I'm losing myself to my illness, but yes.
But sure, honey.
Because then after the fact, we did watch one of the little special features that did feature real life Judy, and just heard, not singing praises, but just saying how much Doctor Who meant to her grandfather.
I think the real girl is named Jessie. Okay, her name was Jessica.
Okay. Still.
But I think they did call, I think, but I believe your
granddaughter Jane Aime. Is that better? Is that good for you?
I just wanted to be honest in the.
Is that good for you? But just singing praises and saying how much Doctor Who meant to her grandfather, and
Yeah, we watched a
it
little.
It was the time of his life.
One of the special features on the Blu-rays. People looking back on William Hartnell, the main one being his actual granddaughter. Yeah, it was a very sweet movie. I am very happy they made it. Even if they don't end up making any other one like this, I'm
happy to have the one.
I'm happy to have the one, especially because this one is so good.
It's so good. It's so tight.
Yeah.
It's one that I will definitely return to.
Yeah. Like this is something that you could watch as like, if you need a good cry, but also don't want to like cry for a long time. You know what I mean?
If you don't want
to
watch.
If you need to get something out.
If you don't want to watch P.L. Travers have to relive the trauma of having a. having an addict father. And
because I will say it is, while it's like we mentioned, it's very well paced. It's a very like easy watch. Like the only time it almost catches you off guard with how emotional you get at the end, because you've come to like these people. So effortlessly.
It's so easy to become invested.
Yeah. I'm really happy that we got to see this. I'm happy that there is a part of me that thinks it's, you know, Matt Smith is my favorite doctor, so there is a part of me that's glad he got to have this little moment. Unfortunately for me, we only have one more Matt Smith story.
Ruh-roh.
And that will be next week.
Christmas!
Yes, the Christmas episode, Time of the Doctor.
Christmas!
We had the name of the Doctor, the night of the Doctor, the day of the Doctor, and now the time of the Doctor. Will be our.
Then we'll have the sun of the Doctor, the moon of the Doctor, the star of the Doctor, the chariot of the Doctor,
the zodiac symbol of the Doctor,
the lovers of the Doctor, the tower of the Doctor, the devil of the Doctor,
the return of the Doctor, the two Doctors. We already had the two Doctors, the fellowship of the Doctor,
the hermit of the Doctor. See, you're doing
the desolation of Doctor.
Yeah, you're doing Hobbit. I'm doing Tarot. So.
But we can look forward to that on the next episode of Who Is My Doctor?
Who is my doctor?
I don't want to go. 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 I don't want to go.
It's okay, Zach. It'll be real easy, like taking off a Band-Aid.
Who is indeed?
RIP.
This is just a little treat getting to talk directly to you guys twice in one episode. I hope you enjoyed this episode because this officially wraps up our time with the 50th anniversary celebration. I know it was a long walk to get here, but I think it was absolutely worth it. I think Cassie got a lot out of it. I think I got a lot out of it. And I hope you got a lot out of it. I am ready to get back to the proper show now, though, and we will be doing that while also celebrating Christmas with The Time of the Doctor. So we'll see you next Tuesday, because your Tuesdays are still Who's Days.